Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today we have a treat as we talk about challenges for franchisees and franchisors. And we really have a great guest today, Mark Fishman of Phelps Dunbar LLP. Last week, we had Shelley Sun, the CEO of Brightstar, that was on promoting her book and discussing her book. And it was really a great show. And today I'm joined again by my co-producer, Joe Caruso. Joe, how are you today? How are things in the great state of Maryland?
Maryland is dreary today. The Chesapeake Bay is gray. But other than that, it's a great day. We've got warm temperatures, so we're pretty happy out here, if anything above 50 degrees.
Well, today in Texas, we have a 60-degree sunny day, which is a little bit cool for us, but certainly good. But we're glad not to have the hot weather around as we have had for most of the year. And talking about, you know, hot things and hot topics last week, Grow Smart, Risk Less, as we talked with Shelley Sun and her new book and her entry into the franchise consulting world, really was a fascinating show, very high listenership over the weekend on demand. And, of course, that show can be accessed at blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Joe, who do we have coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Well, as you know, next week's Thanksgiving, so we'll be off for the Thanksgiving break, and then we'll resume on Thursday, December 1st, and we've got a terrific show with Bob Coleman. Bob Coleman is an expert in lending, in particular SBA 7A and 504 lending. He also puts together the Coleman Report, which lenders use as a guide in determining their interest in lending to particular franchise concepts, because it tells you what the failure rate in terms of their loans are. But his topic is interesting. It's going to be the politics of lending, lipstick on a pig, and what really matters to lenders. So financing is always a hot topic, but never has it been such a great import to franchisors as it has been in the last couple of years. On December 8th, we've got a technology and software solutions in franchising show, and the guests for that are going to be Tom Harrington of Franchise Payment Network, Mindy Gold of Sistino, Jeremy LeDuc of Elements Local, and Brad D'Ancona of Waterfall FMS. So we're going to talk about different ways of using technology, enterprise software systems, software as a service, integrating your customer relationship management with your sales and intranet and payment systems. So it's going to be an interesting discussion. These are people that come at it from a lot of different angles, and making all their different technologies work and play well together. I think it's going to be a great show.
You know, that show's also going to be followed up the following week. There's a four-part webinar series that will be about social, actually about software solutions and technology, and that's put on by Fran Summit, which, of course, I'm co-founder of, and you spoke at the last Franchise Social Media Summit. And it should be a good series. It's a free webinar series. It'll be one each day for an hour around midday, and a lot of information will be forthcoming probably within the next few days. You know, Joe, as you so appropriately and definitely successfully outline our shows on Franchise Today, you do a lot of work behind the scenes. A lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people really don't realize how much work goes in, definitely in the wings in preparation for Franchise Today, and certainly I appreciate all you do. We've had some great guests, great topics. We'll be preparing for the Franchise Legal series as we get back from the holidays, because that will be airing in April and May of 2012. That'll be our third series. And I think today's topic and the way it's titled really kind of is the almost the pinnacle of the year in the way it was structured. HR challenges for franchisees and franchisors, why you should care about tattoos, Facebook, and the end of the alphabet. Give me a little bit of your thoughts as you put together today's show.
Well, I had the opportunity to meet Mark, our guest today, in social media, and I read a number of his articles, and his articles were very compelling, and I really didn't think much about the convergence of tattoos, Facebook, and I really never heard the phrase "end of the alphabet," and I'm going to save that for Mark to elaborate on once we get on air with him. Those three disparate things, or seemingly disparate things, were intriguing to me, and I think putting them all together, even after I wrote it, I was still wondering what it all meant. And I think once we talk with Mark and he explains it, and then he talks about the depth of each of those aspects in terms of human resources and in the age that we live with technology, I think that was the impetus. But I still like next week's show. I really like anything I can put lipstick on a pig into a title is exciting to me.
Well, that should be good as well. Well, you know, today's guest, Mark Fidgman, represents and advises employers regarding federal and state employment laws dealing with race, age, disability, gender, national origin, and religious discrimination, and in administrative proceedings before the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. His practice includes representing employers seeking to enforce non-competitive, non-solicitation agreements and pursuing injunctive relief for improper use of proprietary information. He routinely counsels human resource professionals on issues ranging from overtime questions to discipline and termination decisions. He also specializes in labor and employment issues relating to the restaurant and hospitality industry, including Fair Labor Standards Act compliance. Mark represents governmental and law enforcement agencies in employment and civil rights litigation, has extensive trial experience in the federal court system, and also represents employers in the Mississippi court system. And prior to beginning his legal practice, Mark worked as a television news producer, reporter for a number of network affiliate stations in the Southeast and Northeast, and certainly will give Joe and I a run for our money today. Mark, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you, Paul and Joe. I'm not sure I can beat lipstick on a pig, but I'll do my best.
Lipstick on a pig might be hard to beat, but you have the lead in the advantage of being a week before, and I have to say that you do have one of the more intriguing titles for our show. Maybe we take a couple of minutes to explain to our audience why they really should care about tattoos, Facebook, and, of course, an explanation of the end of the alphabet.
Well, you know, they should care because I'm assuming most of your audience are employers. And all of the things that you just mentioned, tattoos, Facebook, and other social media, they relate to a new type of employee, which in the article I wrote, I somewhat facetiously referred to as the employee with the dragon tattoo, borrowing, with apologies, from the title of the best-selling novel. I've been practicing employment law for a good number of years now, and it occurred to me recently while I was doing a presentation for some HR folks that most of the federal employment law in place sort of assumes an employee who fits the classic baby boomer profile, working 9 to 5, usually for the same company over the long haul. And with younger employees, sometimes it's not as neat a fit. And what's happening is these baby boomer employees are leaving the workplace, and the so-called Generation X employees, they're entering their 50s around now, including myself. And that's why employers have to be ready to address issues of Generation Y and Generation Z employees, and hence the end of the alphabet employees.
That's a very interesting perspective and definition for sure. And for sure, we should definitely be thinking about the end of the alphabet as they're becoming a big, big, big part of consumers and employees and what have you moving down the road. Okay, Mark, so let's talk about tattoos. I mean, recently Mattel, I believe it's Mattel, came out with a Barbie doll that was tattooed. Really caused a lot of controversy, especially amongst the mommy bloggers that are out there. So obviously tattoos today are no longer the ones just for sailors with the anchor or I Love Mom on their arm. They are front and center throughout society now. I've seen them in all shapes and sizes, colors. NBA players have them completely tattooed up and down the arm for everybody to see. So if I'm an employer, can I just say no to tattooed employees or at least make them cover up? I mean, it's my business, my brand, my company's image that I want to protect. Can I make them cover it up?
Well, I'll give you a real lawyer's answer to that. Most of the time, absolutely. But sometimes, no. And it's when, in those no situations, is when employers tend to get themselves in trouble, and it can end up resulting in litigation and can cost a good bit. I hadn't heard the thing about the Barbie doll with the tattoo, but you know, it's obvious that in the last decade or so, tattoos have gone very mainstream, particularly among these younger generations. I saw recently that 60% of all tattoos are now being done on women. I mean, I agree, you see them everywhere. And in the workplace, the question is, you know, when does that cross the line? In some positions where the employee has little or no contact with the customers, it just may never become an issue. Or if it's a job where nobody really cares. I mean, if somebody's working on your car or renovating your house, you probably couldn't care less whether they have a tattoo, and their boss probably couldn't care less. And also, if it's covered up, it also isn't an issue. I know an attorney in another firm who has the full arm sleeve tattoos, but, you know, if he's in court or meeting with clients, he's wearing a suit or a tie. So, again, not an issue. Where it does become an issue is where you have a position such as a bank employee, a waiter in a high-end restaurant, where the open display of a tattoo or what's also very common, a piercing, it may not be conducive to the message that the employer is trying to get across to the public. And again, getting back to your original question, employers retain a great deal of discretion in these things. However, in certain scenarios, restrictions on tattoos in the workplace could constitute a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and could constitute a claim of religious discrimination. There was a good example of this in a recent lawsuit that was filed by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission against the Red Robin gourmet burger chain, and I think that illustrates you know, a lot of the issues involved.
What about if the tattoo is clearly visible, such as on a neckline or even across a forehead, like some of these gangs have? Is that reason enough right there not to hire the person? I mean, I know it's probably reason enough, but can that be the deciding factor?
Again, it depends on the tattoo, but I'm going to say, working on your assumption that it's like a gang tattoo, absolutely, that mm-hmm. can be the basis. That can be the basis not to hire somebody. There's no protected class of tattoos or tattooed people. It's only when the tattoo crosses the border into the area of a religious practice is when it really really becomes an issue for employers. And that was the case in the Red Robin case. There was a fellow who was hired as a server, and he followed an ancient religion that required him to get these tattoos around his wrists, which contained liturgical verses of some sort. And I've seen pictures of them, you know, very, very unobtrusive, not really a big deal. And according to his religion, he was not allowed to cover these up. Well, he gets hired at Red Robin, and for the first 6 months, there's no issue. I mean, customers don't complain, management doesn't complain, there's no problem, even though Red Robin had a dress code policy that forbade open display of tattoos. And then a new manager comes, he sees them, he says, cover those up. The fellow says no, and he gets terminated. And what happened is he filed a charge with the EEOC, which filed a lawsuit on his behalf. And because the company would not accommodate this religious practice in some way, the company ended up having to settle this for approximately $150,000, and they had to revise their dress code policy to include the option of religious accommodation in a case just like that.
Wow, that's very interesting. Very interesting. I know working with some children's entertainment franchises, I could just imagine, you know, kids looking at somebody that had, you know, was heavily inked, as they say, might be a little bit scared or frightened, but, you know, it is becoming more mainstream. So, like I said, the Barbie dolls, I was really appalled when I saw that there actually was a Barbie doll with tattoos all over it. And I guess everybody, you know, to each his own, it's a way of branding individuals, and some of it, I guess, is done in taste, but definitely looking at it from the perspective of, you know, a business, a brand, and a company's image, certainly that needs to be protected because there's been big investment made into it. So, you know, jumping over to another part of the title, you know, Facebook, how has Facebook specifically and social media generally impacted employer labor practices? Because it seems to me that the casual observer might believe that checking up on a job candidate's Facebook page, LinkedIn profile, tweets on Twitter would be wise and a risk-free activity.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, the impact of social media has just been enormous, and it's moving so fast. I'm sure 5 years down the road, what constitutes social media will probably be much different than what it is today. I still find it unbelievable what people will openly post about themselves. You know, and I think to some extent it's a prevalent but mistaken mindset that you still can be anonymous on the internet. But, you know, it's so common now, people posting pictures of themselves drunk or doing drugs or other things on the internet, that it's almost become a stereotype. It would seem that social media would be an HR person or an employer's dream come true for screening job candidates, because it's very cheap and it's very easy. You know, you can call up the, you know, punch in the person's name, look at their page, and you can see if there are any red flags that might make you say, yeah, I think we'll pass on this person. I actually had a case that where this happened. The plaintiff was a pretty young guy, and he portrayed himself in the lawsuit as a very law-abiding, straight-arrow type of fellow, and there was a law enforcement aspect to this case. And I just did a casual internet search, and I found his social media page, where he pretty much confirmed that he was a member of a fairly well-known street gang, and was engaged in activities that obviously, once we knew about them, did not help his case. So, I mean, it is a great tool. And most HR people these days are using it. The risk that they run, though, is where they're looking for information and they find out information that they could otherwise never have asked in a job interview, could never have asked on a job application, and which it is illegal to rely on in making employment decisions. The EEOC is beginning to get very active in this regard. The fairly recent law, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, actually includes language that that makes it a violation for employers to rely on information that they get on the internet. So it can be a somewhat risky proposition. There are ways of doing it properly to avoid the risk of liability.
It didn't seem that long ago that that's all we talked about was Generation X. Was kind of getting used to Generation Y coming up, and now I discover I really need to learn all about Generation Z. And as I said at the beginning of the broadcast, I mean, these are big, big parts and segments of our population of consumers, as well as employees and future employees. How do these generational demographics change the employment landscape?
Well, you know, first of all, I have to give the kind of the caveat, I guess, that these generational labels, and they're not my invention, they're pretty standard. These are broad generalizations, because obviously not every young person you hire is going to fit into one of these neat little boxes. But there are some significant differences from prior generations of employees. The Generation Y folks, much more likely to be college educated. They tend to be very high performance employees, but they're also high maintenance. They tend to question the status quo a little bit more. They tend to be more career loyal than employer loyal. They tend to move from job to job much more frequently, which obviously can create, you know, retention problems if somebody, you know, that you've spent the time and effort to train, you know, jump ship after, you know, fairly short period of time. The Generation Z folks are an interesting proposition from a employment standpoint, because they're just now, the oldest members are just now entering the workplace. And this is a generation that was born into the new technology. They don't know anything about a time before the internet or social media, and it's reflected in a lot of the ways that they behave. Some psychologists are claiming that this generation almost has a form of acquired attention deficit disorder, because they are so connected to the technology that they have a very short attention span, that they have difficulty focusing on projects, which obviously would have an impact on employment, because of this intense dependence on the technology.
Joe, any thoughts on this? I know we had a bunch of discussions with respect to the various generations and the end of the alphabet. Any thoughts on this? I guess we don't have Joe on. We probably lost the.
I'm back. I'm back. I had you.
Oh, you're back.
I'm back. I'm back. Actually, I had a question related more to Facebook, and as a tool, I'm curious, how can you use it and at the same time not create liability for the company or for your business in the hiring and recruitment process? It seems like it's so easy to use, and you're kind of saying it's really easy to abuse at the same time.
Well, you know, part of it is, you know, people, you know, from looking at people's Facebook pages, you know, they will put just about everything up there. And quite frequently, if they're putting up information about their medical condition, their veteran status, their religion, those are red flags that you know, even inadvertently might be relied on by an employer, and that would open them up to a lawsuit. One way that this, that a lot of employers are doing this, and it's probably a pretty good method, is to erect sort of a Chinese wall, is have a designated person who is not involved in the employment decision, not involved in hiring anybody, who will actually do the internet search, filter out any information that would be inappropriate to base an employment decision on, and then present this redacted information to the actual decision maker, who can look at it and say, oh, here's some very positive things, you know, community service, or here are some very negative things, oh, he gets arrested all the time. And that's probably a pretty good method for companies to use internally. There are now a number of companies that do approximately the same thing for payment, and those actually have a bit of an advantage because you create a paper trail or at least a record of what information the employer was actually provided. So if the company sends over their document saying here's the redacted version of the internet search, you have a pretty good piece of evidence later on if you get involved in litigation to say we had no idea about XYZ information. This is what we were given, and this is what we based our information on. So, you know, that's an option as well. What's interesting, though, is just recently, and literally within the last month or two, members of Congress, in particular, Senator Charles Schumer, Senator, what's the fellow's name? The former comedian. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But they have started sending letters to these companies asking them questions about what they're doing to protect privacy information. So it's quite likely down the road we're going to see some more government regulation in this area. But right now it's not really governed by anything but employer discretion and, you know, how these particular companies choose to operate.
Go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry. Continue.
What's interesting, though, is that I think it's great to put that firewall, put that Chinese wall in place. The curiosity factor and in creating the discipline not to have that hiring authority go and look at a candidate for an important role in the company, look at their LinkedIn profile or look at their Facebook page or follow what they're tweeting about on Twitter and kind of get an idea of what their political activities are, what their religious beliefs might be. I mean, they're going to be exposed to, potentially to all of those kinds of things. But I don't know if some executives or small business owners can really help themselves from not looking.
Well, it usually only takes one lawsuit for folks to get real discipline. But that's kind of an HR responsibility and a training issue, you know. And you make a very good point. Human nature is what kicks into this. And I mean, we're all curious, and it's, you know, one of the problems is it's so easy. That's why I think it's very important for companies to really set up policies and have specific procedures and make it real clear why you don't just do these casual searches, particularly if somebody is an active candidate for a position.
Mark, where does LinkedIn fit into this equation? We've had this discussion here on Franchise Today in the past, and there doesn't seem to be a clear direction on this. You have LinkedIn, which is a professional social networking site, and you have people giving and requesting recommendations. Now, you might have an employee of a company leave. Now he's working with another company, and he asks a friend of his that is at his previous company to give him a recommendation and specifically about his work. What are the implications to the original company as a former employer?
Generally, it wouldn't be an enormous problem, except to the extent, you know, and again, it would depend on the industry. You know, in certain situations, you could inadvertently give away proprietary information, confidential information, depending on the extent of the detail that the was contained in any kind of reference. LinkedIn is somewhat of a different animal because it's a professional service. People are much more careful about what they're putting out there. So you don't run into a lot of the same issues that you do with the other social media, which are primarily casual communications.
Well, I both agree with you on that, Mark, but then I disagree with you, and let me make my point. Because of the applications that are available in the various social media that pull and populate information from the other social media, there's a Twitter application that your tweets can pop up on your LinkedIn profile and therefore would be on there from a casual social media.
Well, that could be a concern. Interestingly enough, I was talking to or giving a presentation on this not that long ago, not on the social media, but just on the whole issue of giving references to former employees who are, you know, either looking for a job or in the process of leaving. And it's a ticklish situation because generally you can open yourself up to defamation claims, depending. I mean, you know, there's never usually no problem if you say, yeah, Joe was the greatest employee we ever had. We're sorry to see him go. You'd be lucky to have him. It's when someone calls you up and says, I see that, you know, so-and-so worked for you. What kind of an employee are they or were they? And, you know, the honest response is they were a terrible employee. You know, if they hadn't quit, we were going to fire them. And you can give, you know, if you even giving a truthful response can open you up to being sued, whether it would be a viable lawsuit, because, you know, truth is usually a defense in these cases. You know, the best policy is, you know, what I tell a lot of my clients is your reference policy should be, we will acknowledge that so-and-so worked here from this date to this date, and that's pretty much it. You know, an employer is under no requirement to give a job reference.
Sure. We're live right now on Franchise Today. I'm Paul Segretto. I'm joined by my co-host Joe Caruso, as well as labor law attorney Mark Fishman, and we are talking about why you should care about tattoos, Facebook, and the end of the alphabet. Certainly, HR challenges for franchisees and franchisors, and we're discussing the convergence of evolving technologies, generational changes, employment issues facing franchisors and franchisees alike. Joe, right before I had asked a question, I think I had stepped on top of you. What were you trying to say to Mark?
Well, I think you brought up a really good point for Mark to comment on in terms of LinkedIn recommendations. But I have a slightly different take on the LinkedIn recommendations and how they might be problematic. I've seen recently where a lot of people that are currently employed at the same company are giving each other recommendations while still working at a company, and I think that presents a different problem to an employer in that if they decide to terminate somebody for cause, not for cause, or just reduction in force, and they give an example of to the employee that they're terminating because of poor performance, and yet they have recommendations from people above them, people lateral to them, and people below them saying how great they are as an employee. I think that would be problematic for that franchisor. And if that HR department isn't really watching this kind of stuff, they could run into trouble. What do you think, Mark?
That's an excellent point, and this comes up a lot. Not so much yet in the social media aspect, but just in performance reviews in general. We've had numerous lawsuits where you have an employee who finally gets fired but may have been there for a long time, and finally they've had enough and they terminate him. And after he files his lawsuit, you go in, you know, they'll tell you, oh, he was a terrible employee, you know, he did a lousy job. And you look at the personnel file, and either there's no write-ups, or worse, there's a series of job reviews where this supposedly horrible employee repeatedly gets, you know, superior marks on everything. And that just can cripple you at trial, because you'll have your client getting up there and telling about how awful this employee was, and the plaintiff's attorney will say, but you said here he was superior. And it really can put an employer on the spot. This is what we call evaluation inflation. And it happens a lot, because generally most employers do not do good evaluations or honest evaluations. And it becomes even more problematic when the person doing the evaluation works directly with the employee and they're very reluctant to say anything bad. So they typically say everybody's superior. And what you're talking about, you know, and it's a very interesting thing. I hadn't really thought about it that much. I'm relatively new to LinkedIn. But if on the somebody's LinkedIn site, your superior says, you know, Joe is the best darn insurance analyst we've ever had, that's the type of thing that will come back to bite you. And it is an admission by a party, so in all likelihood, it would be admissible.
Sure.
Yeah, but in this case, Joe is a terrible insurance analyst, so they'd be okay.
Well, we talked about, you know, casual social networks, and certainly Facebook can be construed as being casual, and it's more a place where people post character-compromising photos, personal information that might be better reserved as private and controversial subjects that could impact one's employment prospects. But what about employee use of Facebook with unflattering or controversial comments about the employer and the company? I mean, what can the employer control, and what can happen when the employer overreaches?
You are touching on one of the most recent and most cutting-edge issues in employment law. And that is, you know, when does an employee's Facebook or social media communications become protected under the National Labor Relations Act? And this is come up within the last year, and it is a very evolving field. A lot of companies really don't know what to do regarding their social media policies. And this to put this in perspective, it's a bit of a history lesson. The National Labor Relations Act was enacted in 1935. It was part of the whole New Deal legislation. And generally, you know, it's pretty complicated, but generally it guarantees the rights of employees to organize and form unions and collectively bargain. And as part of the act, it creates the National Labor Relations Board, which kind of oversees the whole thing. So what's happened in kind of a new spin on labor law is the National Labor Relations Board has been filing unfair labor practice complaints against employers who either discipline or terminate their employees for making nasty, disparaging comments about their employers or their supervisors on the employee's personal Facebook page, and in some cases on their personal tweet account. And what's real important to remember, and what comes as a shock to a lot of employers, is it doesn't matter whether you're a union shop or a non-union shop, the National Labor Relations Act can still apply to you, and a number of these companies that had the complaints filed against them were not union, but they still fall under the act.
So as a practical matter, What can an employer do?
Well, it is important, you know, it's important to have a social media policy, and just because of what the National Labor Relations Board is doing, It doesn't mean that employees have free rein to just go around and badmouth their company and badmouth their coworkers and their supervisors with no fear of negative employment consequences. So any kind of social media policy that prohibits offensive, unprofessional, or defamatory comments can still be enforceable if you kind of make sure that it fits within these National Labor Relations Act interpretation. And that's also an important thing to make clear is this is not the law. Courts have really not looked at this yet. This is an administrative agency making this determination. But a couple of points to put in your social media policy if you have one. If you don't, you should. One simple thing is have your policy acknowledge the law. You know, put something in there that says, this nothing in this policy shall be construed to be in violation of the National Labor Relations Act and any other applicable laws. One other thing to put in is avoid the use of the word disparagement. There was a very well publicized case that kind of put this on the forefront, where this lady said all sorts of nasty things about her supervisor. And the key part of this, when it crosses the line to being concerted activity under the Act, is it elicited comments from other employees, and that's what made it protected under the Act. Don't use the word disparagement. In that particular case, the policy said, had prohibited disparagement of the company or its supervisors. And that's such a broad term that it invites the National Labor Relations Board to find your policies overbroad. And they can file an unfair labor practices complaint simply on your policies being too broad. It doesn't matter if you haven't disciplined anybody and you haven't terminated anybody. You can get a complaint simply on the basis of the policy. And generally, avoid overly broad language. Keep it relatively general. And one piece of advice, and it's really not part of a policy, but in looking at all these complaints that have been filed, you kind of get the picture that in a lot of cases, the employment decisions made by the company were made in the heat of the moment when they were real mad at the employee for saying, nasty, awful stuff about him, that if they had stepped back and cooled down, they probably would not have made the decision. So it's also important to view each of the situations that arise on a case-by-case basis, because they're not all going to be the same, and it's very hard to have a policy that, is going to fit every situation.
Yeah, I would especially agree with that, considering the advent of recent time of Google+. I mean, a year ago, 6 months ago, if we were writing social media policies and procedures, we wouldn't have known about Google+. So definitely a moving target.
I was going to say that's a very good point too. There's a tendency of companies, they say, okay, we need a social media policy. We'll write one. Okay, we're done. And it the wise thing to do is review your policy at least on a yearly basis, because, like you said, it's a moving target. The technology is constantly changing. I mean, you look at things like Skype, which mm-hmm. There's social media out there that we can't even imagine now. So employers need to stay on top of that and make sure that their policies, reflect these changes.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a moving target.
Mark, question, in light of what you just said, how do you think, or how would you rate Target's reaction to, Target Store's reaction to one of their employees that has initiated this petition drive to force or to get public pressure on Target to not open next week, Thanksgiving night at midnight, so that their employees would have more time with their families. I mean, they're up to like 95,000 signatures, and this guy's front and center in mainstream media and front and center in the virtual world.
Not being real familiar with that other than what you've told me, I'd say they need to do pretty much nothing. Because what you're talking about there, if he's out there in social media and he's putting out a message complaining about a condition of employment and he is eliciting responses and support from other employees, that seems to be almost the definition of concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act. I think if they turned around and say, you know, and fired him, and again, I don't know all the circumstances. There may be other things going on as well. But just based on that, I think they would be ill-advised to take any negative action against him.
Well, I think this one's playing out in real time. I don't know of anything that Target hasn't addressed him as an individual. They have addressed the situation, and they've just clarified things. They said they are asking people to come in. They are paying them time and a half for their hourly employees for that day, and they're paying them their regular rate on Friday. And, of course, if they go over 40 hours or whatever overtime kicks in the particular state, they'll pay them what they owe them. But that's pretty much they're just stating their case, and they're kind of being mum, and they really haven't retaliated in any way or reacted in any kind of punitive way towards the individual, from what I've seen, and maybe they're doing the right thing.
Well, I mean, you know, from what you're saying, I mean, you know, as far as employment law, I mean, they're entitled to be open on these days they want to be open, and, you know, if they're complying with the Fair Labor Standards Act as far as all the wage issues, they've done nothing wrong. You know, they're probably, if they're keeping mum and really not taking the bait, that's probably the wisest thing for them to do.
You know, it's interesting.
But you know what? You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we wouldn't even be talking about this because the communication channels through the internet, the ability for one person to make this much noise wasn't so readily available.
Oh no! This would not. I mean, 10 years ago, this would not have happened. This is all. I mean, the speed in which these type of communications can be made is just phenomenal, and that's why, you know, social media has become, you know, actively used by, you know, by the labor movement just for that very reason.
You know, when you look at this from a promotional, a publicity standpoint, I was just looking on Facebook, and there actually is a Facebook page now that says "Tell Target to Save Thanksgiving," and obviously it's being driven by this petition. And there's a bunch of comments on there, and one in particular that's interesting. It says, you know you've made it big when there are petitions to stop your petition. And so it seems like this is going to play out a lot over the next week or so. But I want to go back a second, Mark, to your discussion about social media policies, because whether they're for employees or, you know, as we our target audiences are franchisors and franchisees, they have their own social media policies within, you know, their franchise systems to be used at different levels. There are staff social media policies and procedures. And I think what's really missing a lot of times are guidelines. Because the policies, you know, specifically say do this, don't do that. And I don't think there's enough emphasis placed at any level in how you should do it and why with respect to guidelines. What are your thoughts on that?
Now, just so I'm clear, guidelines and the policies themselves to instruct the employees?
Whether it be to instruct the employees, but I think actually more towards showing them how it should be done or giving them recommendations beyond just don't do this or do that, explaining the parameters. And I guess it comes back down to, you know, training, you know, especially if it has anything to do with talking about the brand, because you hear online, and as you might know, I'm very heavily involved in social media at all different levels and franchise organizations. And, of course, the big thing about social media that everybody talks about is building community, starting the conversation, keep the discussion going and stuff like that. And there's a lot of vagueness about it. There's a lot of uncertainty about it. There's a lot of, not knowing what to do, and people hesitate. And certainly social media can be used to an advantage. And when you look at, Facebook pages, a certain brand has a Facebook page. I mean, it would be good to have, employees chiming in from a positive standpoint. So I don't really think that enough time is spent on social media and how to do it right, and I think that's where I'm referring to guidelines.
Yeah, and again, that comes down to training. I think a lot of employers, a lot of companies, they want to jump on the bandwagon and say, we need a Facebook page and we need a Twitter account, and they sometimes will assign somebody to here, send our message out, without a lot of thought being given to it. And it's the type of thing where the employer really has to decide what type of message they're getting out and how they want to utilize this. And training is the issue. And for a lot of companies, that might mean bringing somebody in to actually, from outside to train folks. There's actually kind of a funny instance that happened recently. Chrysler was they had this big ad campaign where they were kind of tying their cars into the rebirth of Detroit. And they had a Twitter account, and they were sending out all these things that pretty much went along with their campaign. And they had hired some hip young folks to manage this. And one of them sent out a message. I don't know if he was bored or annoyed that day. And it went out to all these thousands of people, and it said, "It's funny how Detroit is known as the Motor City, yet nobody here can expletive drive." and this went out under the Chrysler tweet account, and it just kind of set off a firestorm, and obviously did a lot of damage to this whole publicity campaign. Although it's pretty funny if you're not Chrysler, and I think that's an example of just throwing people out there and saying, "Here, go do social media for us," what you're doing.
And I heard something as to when that was going on, that there is no longer an American car manufacturer dealership within the city limits of Detroit, which I found very, very disturbing, but interesting. And as we're moving towards the top of the hour, we are on Franchise Today. Discussing a host of HR challenges, certainly for franchisors and franchisees alike. My guest is Mark Fishman of Phelps Dunbar, and my co-producer Joe Caruso is on the air as well. Mark, how can recognizing generational differences and embracing new technologies like social media actually become a competitive advantage for business owners in attracting talent, enriching a company's culture, and achieving higher productivity?
Well, I mean, just look at the last 7 years. Facebook launched in 2004, originally as a way for college students to keep up with their friends. And now there's not a major company that doesn't use it or some other social media in some way for marketing, advertising, or for job posting. I mean, you just look at LinkedIn. It amazes me how much job searching and job posting is going on that. You look at just the impact that's having on other forms of advertising. It's just immense. I don't think it could be overstated just how beneficial it can be to employers to utilize social media.
Definitely so. I mean, it is a new world. I've heard of companies where they're no longer using email, and employees, the younger generational employees, are conversing and communicating back and forth through Twitter. I know of oil companies that are talking to engineers on the oil platforms through Twitter. I mean, it is a whole new world and a lot to think about. And I think one of the key things that you spoke about 5 or 7 minutes ago, and you talked about a brand, a company looking at a Facebook message and a message to go out, of really giving some thought behind it before pressing that, you know, that post button and getting it online. And I think a lot of companies, a lot of individuals, don't give thought to what's being posted online. And as we've said multiple times on this show, and it was initially brought out by Jonathan Redgrave, an attorney that was on the show back during our legal series. We talked about e-discovery and how these things last forever, and brought up to me almost alarmingly, but surprisingly, but, you know, probably something that needs to be done, that the Library of Congress is archiving all tweets. I'm sure the social media aren't far behind. So it is here to stay. Mark, I really do appreciate you being a guest today on Franchise Today. I'm sure we could talk hours upon hours on this topic, because it is a changing situation almost daily. And I'm sure as Google Plus comes up to steam, comes up to speed, as well as others gain full steam, there's going to be a lot to be talked about. But again, I thank you for taking the time out of your day and being a guest on Franchise Today.
I appreciate the invitation.
Joe, another great show, definitely chock full of information and things to be to thinking about, as well as things to be concerned about. What was your take on today's show?
Well, you know, I'm always cautious when you come up with show topics like HR, because to most people, HR is not like the most exciting thing that a company does, and HR is oftentimes a drudgery in terms of recruitment, or, you know, with disciplining employees, terminating employees. And it was refreshing to read Mark's original article that I read about the dragon tattoo that really prompted me to reach out to him. It's more complex than that. It's an interesting topic, and I like the way we ended up the show in terms of figuring how do you use all this to build your business, to have a competitive advantage, to leverage these technologies to improve your productivity and profitability. So I thought it was a great show, and I really appreciate Mark agreeing to be on it with us.
Yeah, I mean, boy, talk about a challenging aspect of the law when you throw in social technology and all the different social media that are out there. I mean, it's just got to be overwhelming at times, especially as they possibly can eat. The opposing attorney says, you know, we want to see all your tweets, we want to see all your Facebook posts.
Well, and I think it's good to demystify all of this stuff because, you know, when you take them in part, the individual pieces are not that complicated, but they can be overwhelming in the aggregate. And I think breaking it down into its various aspects of HR, the social media, the generational things, it begins to make sense to people once they actually take a breath, take a step back, and think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, next week we've got another great show. Next week we're on Thanksgiving break. Then we come back. We have two great shows before we lead into the Christmas holiday. Boy, this first part of the third season of Franchise Today has gone by in record speed. Joe, again, I do thank you for all your hard work on Franchise Today. Next week, like I said, there'll be a replay, and then we'll see you after the holiday. Until then, I'm Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.